This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines. China strongly criticizes the U.S. for approving the potential sales of new weapons to Taiwan. Reports coming out of Ukraine say that Russian forces are edging closer to capturing the strategic eastern city of Bakhmut. And the death toll from a train collision in central Greece rises to 42, with officials expressing little hope of finding anyone still alive. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. China has reacted strongly to a U.S. decision to provide Taiwan with new weapons worth about $620 million. The Chinese Foreign Ministry in a statement said Washington should refrain from selling arms to Taipei and having any military contact with the island. Reaction came after the Pentagon announced that the State Department has approved the potential sale of new weapons to Taiwan. The package could include medium-range missiles for the island's F-16 warplanes, as well as high-speed anti-radiation missiles. Beijing has repeatedly condemned the U.S. arming of Taiwan, saying that Washington is bolstering separatists on the self-ruled island. China considers Taiwan as part of its territory and says it is committed to protecting its sovereignty. Earlier, we were joined by political analyst Digby James Wren. He believes that the U.S. wants to militarize the region and to stir up conflict.
Well, it's potential in the sense that it has to be approved, usually takes about a month or so. But there's been a lot of these. The Biden administration has made 9 arms sales to Taiwan in 1.5 years. And look, this is not going to end. This is going to be a continual salami slicing of the Taiwan policy. And of course, Beijing cannot be happy about this. There's always going to be people that say that it's going to backfire, or that it's a positive thing and we should arm Taiwan more, etc. But it's really a very, very long-term, long-held strategy of the United States to always keep tensions high there, to keep everybody's attention focused on that area, and it's just constant. And that's not going to end. That is basically U.S. policy, is to maintain high tension as much as possible, so that it can gain any geopolitical, geostrategic benefits it can. And what that means is by scaring everybody in the region to get them to sign up to, you know, follow the US or to sell more arms, which is what they've been doing. There's lots of arms sales in the region. Singapore's just bought some new jets, missiles in Japan. I mean, look, this is a constant, and in South Korea as well. Basically, the U.S. just wants to completely militarize the region. It's a permanent incremental escalation, and it's dangerous.
The United States has joined Canada and the European Union, imposing a ban on the Chinese video-sharing social networking service TikTok. White House says federal agencies have been asked to remove and to disallow installations of the application on devices operated by their staff. TikTok, which has 1 billion users globally, has rejected accusations of sharing data with the Chinese government.
Tensions between the United States and China is rising over a deepening row on Chinese video-sharing social networking service TikTok. Washington has given federal agencies an ultimatum to remove and disallow installations of the application on devices operated by their staff. The deadline is set to comply with an order issued by Congress. The ban does not apply to businesses which are not associated with the federal government or to millions of private citizens. But there are now talks of a complete ban for all citizens. The American Civil Liberties Union has warned that such a ban would mean stripping citizens of their constitutional rights to freedom of expression. The White House had already banned TikTok on its devices.
That TikTok poses a problem and an issue. And so we have concerns about that as it relates to Americans' data, collecting Americans' data, and the potential national security risk. And we've been very, very clear on that.
Following the U.S.'s suit, Canada also announced that it was banning TikTok from all government-issued mobile devices. The European Parliament has also banned TikTok from staff devices, meaning the Chinese video-sharing app is now barred in all three of the EU's main institutions. Last week, the European Commission announced it was banning TikTok from official devices. The European Commissioner said the decision to ban TikTok applies only to devices overseen by the EU's executive branch. The US and its Western allies have cited cybersecurity concerns and accused the Chinese government of using the application for spying purposes. But China says the United States is abusing state power to impose bans on the Chinese-owned video app TikTok. The application is owned by Chinese tech giant ByteDance. It has become a political target due to the concerns that the app could be used for spying or propaganda by the Chinese Communist Party. Both Beijing and ByteDance strongly reject the allegation.
We firmly oppose the U.S. side's wrong approach of overstretching the concept of national security, abusing national power, and unreasonably suppressing the companies of other countries. The U.S. government should effectively respect the principles of market economy and fair competition, stop suppressing the relevant companies, and provide an open, fair, and non-discriminatory environment for companies of all countries to invest and operate in the U.S.
Ban against TikTok comes at a time when America stands accused of spying using U.S.-based social media platforms. Just late last year, the so-called Twitter files lifted the lid on a secret alliance between Silicon Valley, spy agencies, and the political establishment.
U.S. restrictions against TikTok comes at a time when the U.S. regime stands accused of using social media platforms for spying purposes on its own citizens and people in other parts of the world. Just recently, the Twitter files lifted the lid on a secret alliance between Silicon Valley, intelligence agencies, and the political establishment.
But really, the U.S. is doing this. And Twitter, even though they promised to shut down all state-backed influence operations, they've worked hand in glove with the U.S. military, giving them special privileges for their fake Twitter accounts, these fake personalities that kind of make organic-looking conversations in Yemen or Syria or Iraq, promoting U.S. narratives in the region, and working with them not to, and Twitter was well aware of what was going on, and did not shut these accounts down for many years. Some of them were suspended earlier this year, but this has gone on for 3, 4, 5 years.
Twitter files indicate that it was the FBI, the DHS, and the CIA that were aggressively and clandestinely seeking to influence American public opinion. Furthermore, Twitter has helped the U.S. military amplify its propaganda campaigns in the West Asia region, allowing fake accounts to push pro-U.S. narratives. Twitter secretly created a special whitelist exempting accounts run by U.S. Central Command or CENTCOM from spam and abuse flags. Leaked documents and emails show that high-level Twitter executives were well aware of the Pentagon's vast network of fake accounts and covert propaganda and did not suspend the accounts. And earlier last year, it was revealed that the U.S. government made efforts to influence cyberspace in the country through a cybersecurity and infrastructure security agency. The U.S. government reportedly pressured social media platforms to, quote, shape online discourse. There are now concerns that officials in the Department for Homeland Security have greater influence to make politically motivated determinations about what constitutes dangerous speech. And critics say the extent to which the DHS initiatives affect Americans' daily social feeds is unclear.
Russian forces have intensified attacks in eastern Ukraine and are edging closer to capturing the city of Bakhmut. The Ukrainian military says the Russians are now advancing toward the city from all directions. On Wednesday, a Ukrainian lawmaker acknowledged that the city would fall into the hands of Russian forces sooner or later. Separately, President Volodymyr Zelensky said Ukrainian forces are keeping each frontline sector under control, but described the battle for Bakhmut as the most difficult one. The capture of Bakhmut would pave the way for Russian forces to seize the rest of the strategic Donbas region bordering Russia. This, as Russian President Vladimir Putin said, a terrorist attack in southern Russia was conducted by a reconnaissance group who crossed into Russia from Ukraine's border.
The Russian army fights against those who today committed another terrorist attack, another crime, penetrated the border area, the Russian Bryansk region bordering Ukraine, and opened fire on civilians.
President Putin said the terrorists had knowingly opened fire at a civilian car. Governor of the southern city of Bryansk, Alexander Bogomaz, confirmed a civilian was shot and killed, and a 10-year-old boy was wounded in the incident. The attack came as President Putin had earlier warned security forces to guard against threats from Ukraine and the West. Russia says the involvement of the U.S. and NATO in the war in Ukraine risks bringing, quote, catastrophic consequences. Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Ryabkov said the conflict is fraught with a direct military clash of nuclear powers. He said the most acute strategic threat is posed by the U.S. and NATO policies aimed at further fomenting the war. He also accused Washington of providing intelligence for drone attacks, allegedly by Kiev, on a Russian military basis. Ryabkov made the remarks during the conference on disarmament in Geneva. He also blamed Washington for the suspension of the New START treaty.
The situation has further degraded following the U.S. attempts to probe the security of the Russian strategic facilities declared under the New START treaty by assisting the Kiev regime in conducting armed attacks against them. Against this background, we perceived as highly cynical those demands by Washington to regain access to Russia's nuclear facilities for inspecting them under the treaty.
He said Russia would continue to comply with the limits on strategic offensive arms set by the pact. After the disarmament conference of the Russian mission in Geneva, Ryabkov said that Moscow would not carry out tests if Washington also refrained from doing so. He said that Russia still had to prepare for the worst. Signed by the then U.S. President Barack Obama and his Russian counterpart Dmitry Medvedev in 2010, the treaty caps the number of strategic nuclear warheads that each side can deploy. Russia has called for a fast and fair investigation into the blast that damaged the undersea Nord Stream gas pipeline last year. Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says Moscow must be involved in any probe into the explosions. Russia has previously accused the U.S. of being behind September's attacks on the multi-billion dollar pipelines, which carried Russian gas to Germany. It also accused Berlin and two other states investigating the matter of trying to cover up the U.S.'s role. The explosion of the pipelines left a huge part of the infrastructure inoperable and released vast quantities of methane gas into the atmosphere. Moscow has been pressing for an international inquiry after U.S. investigative journalists said that President Joe Biden personally ordered the attacks. The U.S. has denied any involvement. The death toll from a train collision in central Greece rises to 42, with officials expressing little hope of finding anyone still alive. A fire department spokesperson said rescue teams worked around the clock in search of survivors, but chances were fading away. According to police, the station master in the charge of signaling has been arrested and charged with causing mass deaths through negligence. On Tuesday night, there was a head-on collision between a passenger and a freight train near the city of Larissa. Two carriages of the train were crushed and a third caught fire, killing and trapping people inside, many of them students. The Greek transport minister has resigned over the tragedy. After the incident, a protest was also held outside of the Athens office of a private train operator that ended with clashes between the protesters and the police. Burkina Faso has officially renounced a military pact with France, asking the former colonial ruler to withdraw troops from the country within 30 days. French authorities have already received a formal notice by the West African nation. The move comes just days after France lowered the flag on its military base near the Burkinabe capital, Ouagadougou. The African country has reportedly declared Russia as its new ally. This would make Burkina Faso the third former French colony in Africa to turn to Moscow for military help after Mali and the Central African Republic. France has maintained its military in Burkina Faso for over six decades. Paris signed a defense pact with Burkina Faso just a month after the country gained independence from France in 1961. In the U.S., over 40 million poor people have just seen a major reduction in their federal assistance in buying food. Experts on food insecurity warned that the country is about to fall off what they are calling a hunger cliff. Rami Mazzeri has more on this story from Chicago.
Even though inflation remains at a 40-year high, United States President Joe Biden has terminated a program which provided extra food money for over 40 million of the poorest Americans. The elderly, the disabled, students, poor children, and the working poor are now forced to find an average of nearly $100 more every month to spend on food. With sanctions on Russia still massively backfiring across the West, grocery prices here have soared more than 11% over the last year.
The families aren't purchasing food at the same price that they were pre-pandemic. So if not, you know, apart from having families come in more often, we may start seeing families that have to cut back on their housing budget. So what they typically spent on rent, utilities, they may have to start dipping into that to pay for groceries.
Experts on food insecurity contend that food aid to the poor has been insufficient, and that was long before the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program started seeing cuts. The expansion of so-called food stamps was both popular and successful, leading to an immediate 10% reduction in the overall poverty rate and a 14% drop in child poverty.
Versus 2021, when a lot of the pandemic relief was in force, our numbers were actually down significantly. So we've seen our numbers grow from 2021 to 2022 about 40%, give or take. We can only imagine what this next round will bring.
Without government involvement, citizens can only turn to charities for help. In states which have prematurely stopped the expanded food aid, food banks are already reporting a 40% increase in the number of visitors.
Last year, the ruling Democrats voted to end the pandemic's expansion of Medicaid, the federal program which provides a bare minimum of health care for the nation's poor. At the end of this month, at least 15 million people will also lose their health care coverage.
Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
That is for this additional World News. It's bye-bye for now.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن
by means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودین
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth that he may make it prevail over all religions though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones. But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslim's major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
کتاب الله.
In the limelight.
Millions of Americans will be watching for signs from the Supreme Court justices about whether student debt relief will survive. Many are asking, is President Biden's student debt forgiveness plan now dead? We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. USA Today has covered this story and tells us more. The Supreme Court battle over President Joe Biden's student loan forgiveness plan is about more than debt relief for 40 million Americans. A much more sweeping debate about presidential power will linger just below the surface on Tuesday, 28th of February, as the High Court begins to pick through Joe Biden's $400 billion student debt plan over the course of several hours of oral arguments. The court's decision, expected later this year, could torpedo President Biden's ability to pursue other policies unilaterally, such as on abortion and on immigration. And that could prove tricky for a president who is presumably seeking re-election with a gridlock Congress. It is much bigger than student loans, said Christopher Walker, a professor at University of Michigan Law School. Professor Walker added, it's about the power of the courts and the power of the president. What the Supreme Court justices signal about that balance of power is one of several long-standing questions the nation's highest court could answer, or at least hint at, as Biden's debt plan gets its day in court. But many are asking, is President Biden's student loan plan dead? President Biden's debt relief plan, the result of a campaign pledge, would forgive up to $20,000 in student loan debt for Pell Grant recipients and up to $10,000 for many other borrowers. The effort has been on hold since a federal court blocked its implementation in October of last year. Millions of American borrowers have had billions in student loan debt erased. Here's how. By the end of the Supreme Court's oral arguments on Tuesday, 28th of February, it may be possible to glean whether an estimated 40 million Americans will ever benefit from that plan. Advocates who support the effort are walking into the courtroom frustrated, but also hopeful. Borrowers want to know the fate of their student loans, said Natalia Abrams, president of the Student Debt Crisis Center, which advocates for borrowers. But the law is on our side, and that is what keeps us going. But the Job Creators Network Foundation, one of the groups challenging President Biden's plan, views it instead as an illegal power grab by the president. If this is allowed to go through, it will give this president and every future president a blank check without any input from Congress or the American people, said Elaine Parker, the group's president. Many are asking, did President Biden overstep his authority with the debt relief plan? Federal courts have clamped down on attempts by federal agencies to make significant policy decisions without explicit approval from Congress. In one high-profile example in June, the Supreme Court invoked the major questions doctrine to strike down tighter rules on power plant emissions. Under that doctrine, courts can invalidate regulations that have a major impact on the economy, are a matter of great political significance, and are not explicitly authorized in the law. though no one is entirely sure how to define those terms. Could student loan debt plan be affected by the end of the COVID emergency? President Biden's lawyers insist the doctrine doesn't apply to the student loan dispute. Federal law, they told the Supreme Court, gives the government power to waive or modify loan rules to help Americans suffering from an emergency such as the COVID-19 pandemic. We just feel very confident, White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre said on Thursday. Jean-Pierre added, "We see this as an important policy that is going to help tens of millions of Americans." But many experts outside the Biden administration are a lot less certain. The law doesn't explicitly discuss a power to forgive loans. No prior administration has read it that way. If the court gets into the major questions doctrine, Professor Walker predicted, President Biden will lose. CNBC has also covered this story and tells us more. The Biden administration is currently blocked from carrying out its promise of canceling up to $20,000 in student debt for tens of millions of Americans while its relief plan heads to the Supreme Court. On Tuesday, 28th of February, the nine Supreme Court justices will hear oral arguments over President Joe Biden's historic debt forgiveness policy, which has faced at least six lawsuits since it was rolled out in August of last year. The Supreme Court has agreed to hear two of those cases. The court frequently takes multiple cases in order to deal with all pending disputes at once, said Dan Ehrman, a law professor at Northeastern University. The Supreme Court justice's ruling, which Professor Ehrman believes will come by late June, will settle the matter and decide if more than 30 million Americans with outstanding federal student loans will get debt relief. On 29th of September, six Republican-led states, that is Arkansas, Iowa, Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, and South Carolina, filed a lawsuit against the president's student debt plan, arguing that President Biden was vastly overstepping his authority by moving to cancel hundreds of billions of dollars in consumer debt without authorization from Congress. The Biden administration says that the HEROES Act of 2003 grants the U.S. Secretary of Education the authority to make changes to the federal student loan system during national emergencies. The United States has been operating under an emergency declaration since March of 2020, because of the COVID pandemic. The HEROES Act of 2003 is a product of the 9/11 terror attacks, and an earlier version of it provided relief to federal student loan borrowers affected by the 9/11 attacks. However, the six states in question counter that President Biden's recent loan forgiveness plan is far more broad than the type of modifications permitted by that law. In other words, higher education expert Mark Kantrowitz said the states are asserting that President Biden is using COVID as an excuse to pass his student loan plan. For example, if it was an emergency, why wait 3 years to provide the forgiveness? Kantrowitz asked. Why present it in a political framework as fulfilling a campaign promise? Yet the Biden administration insists that the public health crisis has caused considerable financial harm to student loan borrowers, and that is, debt cancellation is necessary to stave off a historic rise in delinquencies and defaults. The six states also argued that President Biden's plan would cause financial harm to their states, including a loss of profits for the companies that service federal student loans. The second legal challenge the Supreme Court will consider on Tuesday, 28th of February, is backed by the Job Creators Network Foundation, a conservative advocacy organization. Lawyers for the two plaintiffs Myra Brown and Alexander Taylor argued they were deprived of their procedural rights by the Biden administration because the White House didn't allow the public to formally weigh in on the shape of its student loan forgiveness plan before it rolled it out. As a result, the lawyers argue, Myra Brown and Alexander Taylor are either partially or fully excluded from the relief. The HEROES Act of 2003 exempts the need for a notice and comment period during national emergencies, but, like the states, the plaintiffs in this challenge argue that the law doesn't authorize President Biden's sweeping plan.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sador Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Hidden Files.
Hello and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Children's carefree laughter is one of the most heartwarming sounds in the world. Watching them run around, fall, and get back on their feet again gives us hope for life. Now, what would it be like if, instead of nice and strong skin, the children's body was covered with a layer as delicate as the wings of a butterfly? What if every little bump would mean a burning blister? How then would a child run and play and fill the world with joy? Today's program is on the plight of Iran's butterfly children, whose access to medicine is entangled with political sanctions placed on the country. But who are the butterfly children, and what exactly is their condition?
Epidermolysis bullosa is a genetic condition which affects the skin. It is caused by faults in the proteins that act as the glue which holds our layers of skin together. In EB, the slightest knock or bump causes the skin layers to separate, making blisters and wounds. Kids born with it are often called butterfly children because their skin is as fragile as the wings of a butterfly. Skin is our protection from the outside world. Skin that is working properly allows us to play, run, hug, sleep without a thought. It's not the same for people who live with EB. Walking becomes increasingly hard over time as the feet get more and more damaged. The simple joy of holding a crayon becomes difficult as the fingers fuse together. And eating is frightening as the lining of the throat blisters, sometimes causing kids to choke. In really bad cases, almost no part of the body remains untouched by EB. And people with it live with the constant threat of skin cancer. There is no cure for EB, and caring for children means agonizing 3-hour bandage changes every second day. It is a heartbreaking routine, usually done by mom or dad, and is so traumatizing it can have a devastating effect on the bond between parent and child. In fact, because EB care demands so much time, it can have a huge effect on all the family.
Living with this condition is painful enough when one has access to all the latest forms of treatment available, but there are parents and doctors around the world who are having to fight with forces beyond their biggest resources, like those who live in countries like Iran, Venezuela, Cuba, and many others. What forces are we exactly talking about? Well, we're talking about U.S.-imposed sanctions that make it nearly impossible for these patients to receive the much-needed medical supplies. And this is not only the case for EB patients in Iran. You see, one of the many requirements in living with this disease is a special type of bandage. This bandage must be able to help protect the patient's very fragile skin against any pressure that can cause it to blister. At the same time, this bandage must be made of special material so as not to stick to the patient's skin. Otherwise, in order to be changed, it has to be peeled off the EB patient, which can be extremely painful and cause terrible blisters by itself. And this special bandage is made by a Swedish company, a company that refuses to sell its products to Iranian EB patients as it fears being punished due to U.S. enforced sanctions on Iran. There were some heart-rending stories that I heard while visiting the EB home, and the NGO has sent official letters to the company requesting that the required medical supplies be sold to Iranian patients, as you see here. Yet, the company's response is that it cannot be done, unfortunately, due to the U.S. economic sanctions in force. Now, the question is, what remains is the legality of these sanctions internationally, and what can be done to resolve the issues faced by these patients? So, to discuss this situation further, we will be joined shortly by United Nations Special Rapporteur, Dr. Elena Duhon.
Dr. Elena Duhon is the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the negative impact of unilateral coercive measures on the enjoyment of human rights. She is a professor of international law. Her teaching and research concentrate on sanctions and human rights law, international law, and international environmental law. She is the author of more than 150 books and articles on international law. She has over 40 publications which focus on human rights, targeted and comprehensive sanctions, unilateral coercive measures, and freedom of opinion.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Duhan. What's your assessment of the effect of U.S. unilateral sanctions on the people of these nations?
Well, unfortunately, when it comes to the use of unilateral sanctions, people are usually the whole population of the country is affected quite broadly, especially in the health area. So situation in Iran is not so bad as it some other countries being under unilateral sanctions in a view of the fact that Iran is producing more than 90% of its medicine domestically. We need to take into account, however, that even when the country is producing the medicine domestically, people which are in need of this medicine may still be affected. Take into account that countries need to import raw materials for the medicine. And unfortunately, with the use of unilateral sanctions, especially the comprehensive unilateral sanctions towards Iran, many producers of raw materials are very much reluctant to sell raw materials to Iran. There are problems with delivery and payment. There is a need to use alternative means for payments and delivery. And therefore, it's very complicated to guarantee necessary quality of raw materials.
Well, you talked about the restrictions and the difficulties. What can be done about this situation?
I received information about this situation a few months ago, and I have drafted a communication to the company and to Sweden asking for the assistance on that situation. And unfortunately, the responses which I received unofficially were demonstrating the concerns of the company to be subjected to the sanctions of the United States from one side because of getting money from Iran. Secondly, there were concerns about the ways to get payment from Iran and the ways to deliver these bandages from Sweden to Iran. Previous time, that was UNICEF, which directly engaged into negotiations with Sweden, which resulted in the possibility to deliver the year's storage of bandages. Unfortunately, the storage will be over around September this year. And now UNICEF is cooperating again with Sweden and the company trying to deliver these bandages to the EB patients. Unfortunately, as I have said, that's an ad hoc solution. After coming back from Iran, I also had a meeting with the ambassador of Sweden, and we discussed this situation, and I pointed out that the ad hoc solution is not a solution for the problem. People shall not leave not knowing whether they will be able to get the bandages tomorrow or in a year or not, and what caused them suffering and naturally deteriorate their quality of life. So I asked them to get engaged with the company and to guarantee the unimpeded procurement of this medicine.
What is it going to take to resolve this once and for all?
So the very first step, what the United Nations did, it established this mandate. So basically that was a response to the use of unilateral sanctions and plus to the humanitarian impact unilateral sanctions do. So as I have mentioned, I tried to raise awareness to show specific evidences of humanitarian impact, because what I often face in my work is when I start to talk to the embassies of the countries in which the companies producing the unique equipment are registered, they say, oh, we didn't know, we didn't realize that people are suffering that much and that people are dying. So that was the very first step of the activity of the United Nations. Again, when we are speaking about the short-term solutions, the UN agencies in the countries, and in particular, I speak about a number of specialized agencies in Iran, are very actively engaging now to guarantee the delivery of the basic medical goods necessary for the survival of the people. For example, UNICEF in Iran is very actively engaging to procure the bandages to the EB patients and to procure some other necessary medical equipment for people suffering from severe diseases. However, we need to realize that that's ad hoc solutions trying to handle the situation for a very short period for a very limited group of people. Around a month ago, me together with some other special rapporteurs have issued a press release calling for a total lifting of unilateral sanctions imposed over critical infrastructure, medical goods, without any need to get extra licenses. Because today, unfortunately, something what has been announced to be called humanitarian exceptions is not functioning at all. It's necessary to get a license. It's necessary to find a way how to transfer money, how to guarantee the delivery. When we speak about EB patients in Iran, the recent attempt of UNICEF to deliver a little bit more than a year storage of bandages for EB patient took a year and a half. And today they are trying to engage into delivery of the second delivery. At the same time, I believe that the United Nations shall guarantee that this means all sorts of critical goods are exempted from the use of unilateral sanctions, first of all. In the long-term perspective, I try now to engage with many UN institutions as well as with states and humanitarian actors and scholars to bring attention to the issue of legality. If states will stop to use illegal means, that will mean that we won't need to have the notion what is called humanitarian exception, because sanctions will not be imposed and the states will be able to guarantee the delivery of life-saving medicine.
Thank you so much for being with us right here on Hidden Files, Dr. Elena Duhani. Now, Iran's EB patients have only a few months' worth of special bandages left. They don't know if and when they can receive the next shipment. Many are too young to even understand what sanctions are, and others can't see why their treatment should have anything to do with politics and sanctions against Iran, which are deemed illegal by international standards. Plus, it's not only EB patients who are suffering as a result of these sanctions. All patients whose required medicine and treatment are not entirely made in Iran are affected by these multifaceted sanctions. Now, this leaves Iran's doctors no choice but to either find a way to get around the sanctions or to tell their patients, sorry, I don't think that you will make it. Isn't it ironic, though, that these sanctions are placed on Iran by the U.S., which claims to be the flag bearer of human rights, when in reality Washington has one of the worst records of waging wars against various nations, using their government's violation of these same rights as an excuse. And now the war is on. The U.S. government against special needs patients in sanctioned countries. Will the special needs patients win this battle and be able to heal their wounds, or will the U.S. manage to cause them to die in agony? Either way, these innocent patients will be the only victors in this cowardly war. Until next week, when we come to you to shed light on a whole other set of Hidden Files. Goodbye for me, Marzieh Hashemi, and from the whole crew right here in the studio.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sador Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.